Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge to be had everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A customer at McDonald's pulls a woman from a car fire. A TriMet bus driver is attacked in downtown Portland. And President Obama appears on The View.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed and pure unadulterated genius will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed! Or I give you Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, July 29th, 2010.
Absolutely?
Absolutely.
Totally?
Everything.
Completely. Completely?
If we don't talk about it here, they don't need to know it.
My God, it doesn't even seem possible. Okay.
A car going through a drive-thru sparked a fire that spread to a McDonald's building in Vancouver, Washington, Wednesday. Witnesses said one driver waiting for an order was able to pull a woman to safety as the car burst into flames just after 11 a.m. at the restaurant near Fourth Plain Boulevard and Fort Vancouver Way. Witnesses said flames and smoke were shooting into the sky. Firefighters battling the flames from the rooftop were ordered to get down for fear it could collapse at any moment.
I'm unclear about this. She was going through a drive-thru?
Yes.
What did she order at the drive-thru that caused flames to shoot into the sky? What exactly happened?
She was going through a drive-thru, and she sparked a fire. I'm not sure what exactly that means, but apparently her car, burst into flames, and it...
That doesn't really happen.
Sure.
I mean, it obviously really happened, but you know what I mean? That doesn't seem like a thing that happens nearly as easily as Michael Bay would have you believe.
Well,
just look at an igloo and it...
If I may share a tale...
Yes.
I used to live in North Portland, and I lived across the street from some people that... I'm not sure what sort of activities went on there, but people did come and go at all hours of the day and night.
Staying for just a few minutes at a time?
Yes.
Yeah.
And one night, it was very, very hot. It was the summer, and I was sleeping in the front bedroom, and I heard my neighbors pull into their driveway in their big late model sedan. And I looked out the window and saw them. I was like, oh, the people across the street are home. Went back to sleep. And I'm not sure how much longer later I woke up and saw the unmistakable red and blue flashing of emergency lights.
Right.
And looked back out the window, and the car that had pulled into the driveway was now shooting flames out of every side of it and up the side of their house.
That is awesome.
So I believe they may have, I don't know, left a cigarette burning in the ashtray.
Uh-huh.
Or left a meth pipe on the seat. I'm not sure what exactly happened.
How long it was going to take you to get to what we all kind of figured out early on in the story.
But there are many reasons a car can burst into flames.
This is like there was that show on the Discovery Channel some years ago, and it was just called Why Planes Crash. Which is one of the things that I guess there's many reasons for that, but it's a sort of title that has a certain comedic vagueness to it. But the sort of why cars explode thing. I like the idea, though, that she was just going through, when I picture it, it somehow is even funnier because she's not even really doing anything. She's just sort of driving along through the drive-thru, and then she's just suddenly in the midst of a conflagration for no reason at all, which has a kind of delightful randomness to it, but that's probably not the case.
A gentleman in the text box shares that our levels are hella low today.
Let me see if I can adjust. Really, they're hella low?
Yeah, is that a technical broadcasting term?
I believe it might be. Hold on a second. Let's see if I can boost the output level there. How does he feel about our levels now?
How do we sound now, sir?
Mr. Judgmental. Mr.
Oh, sure, he's got nothing to say now.
No, I see. That's right. Where are you now? Now that my levels are fine, huh?
All right.
Yeah.
Nothing to say now.
Look, I'm just doing what I do here. So, right. Look, at least we didn't start the program today just drenched in reverberation for no readily apparent reason. So I'm doing the best I can.
Well, at the drive-thru, the McDonald's drive-thru, Keely Hennehan, who works at the comic book shop Amazing Stories across the street, said she saw the driver of the truck in line jump out, run to the car after the fire started, pull the woman inside to safety after the fire rapidly spread. It was incredible, she said. Like he was Batman or Superman or something.
Or something.
Jim Flaherty with the Vancouver Fire Department said employees and customers were safely evacuated, but the building may be a total loss. Two workers were treated for smoke inhalation. So, there you go.
Flaherty's the guy that took over once O'Malley and O'Donohue got out of there before Mooney came in and wrecked everything. All right. Hey, by the way, you can tell... I don't mean to sound snarky, but you can tell your helper that I'm in the text box there that I'm going to endeavor to adjust the levels some more here.
He says we're better now.
All right. Oh, really? We are? We're broadcasting in a manner that is sufficient for your delicate ears?
Apparently we are satisfying him now.
All right. Well, there you go. Next. All right. Fantastic.
TriMet officials said a bus driver was attacked by two men Tuesday night in downtown Portland. The Line 20 bus was stopped for a bridge lift near Southwest 4th Avenue in Burnside at about 8 p.m. when two men began pounding on the bus windows and boarded the bus. They then began kicking and hitting the driver. The driver did not need to go to the hospital. Police are reviewing the surveillance camera footage from the bus but aren't releasing it to the public. Officers describe one of the men as white, in his 30s, 6 feet tall with a medium build and short brown hair.
Did the officers describe him as... Because that's usually the kind of thing you get from a witness, I think.
No, this says officers said that.
Some vague-looking white guy.
The other man was described by police as white in his 30s, 5 feet 10 inches tall, with a stocky build.
And this was a beating that happened on a bus?
On a bus. They just got on the bus and beat up the TriMet driver.
Sort of an Onion-style vagueness to that headline, too. You know, this just in, a bunch of dudes come out of nowhere and just start wailing on this one guy. The Onion News Desk. Well, there you go. But it was the driver they were beating.
Yeah, they apparently... They may just be the kind of people that are just very angry about buses in general.
They have a generally obstreperous attitude about everything.
They're just not, you know, not happy.
Yeah, okay. Nah, it's something I was going to say, but you know what? I'm better served by not doing it. I will just say this. I'll say that we have any number of TriMet folks who listen to this show and the Rick Emerson Show and have done so over the years. I got many... A lot of acquaintances who drive buses for TriMet. Because those guys, I'm not saying they're listening to talk radio while they ought to be keeping one eye on the road and the other eye on a bicyclist that they might put into their grill. I'm saying that, you know, there's a lot of downtime when you're driving a bus, and it's like, how many times can you hear smoke on the water or something? So they end up listening to a lot of talk radio. I have heard more stories over the years from TriMet bus drivers who say that the public just has no idea. I mean, I kind of got an inkling, but they said, we have no idea just the amount of crap they deal with and the number of just jackass hooligans that the average guy who is driving a bus or driving the Max or something, just the number of cretins they have to deal with every single day of their life. I'm not saying there's something wrong with taking the bus in general. You know, it's like taking the bus is in and of itself enough to identify you as being some sort of a ne'er-do-well, some rapscallion, a dead-ender. But if you're going to find... Some guy who's just going out just to bust up a dude's face, or just his idea of a hobby is just to go out with a screwdriver and just start plunging it into somebody's neck. That guy is probably going to be on some form of public transportation, because it seems like that presents a target-rich environment for folks like that. So I'm just this is a long.
It's also filled with people that are just disgruntled and unhappy with their lives for a lot of reasons.
But they're disgruntled and unhappy with their lives to a large extent because they got to share the bus with some guy who reeks of filth and day-old cheese and keeps scratching himself in inappropriate places and then smelling his fingers. That guy's every time I have to take the Max, that guy is sitting across from me, Mr. Scratch and Sniff. You know, one hand to the crotch, hand to the nose, over and over, repeat. Stop it.
Take public transportation, kids. It's good for you.
It's not. It's only good for you in that it'll motivate you to go to college, you know, or to learn to type or something that'll get you enough money for a car. Here's Don Taylor.
President Barack Obama offered an uncommonly candid discussion of race and other issues during his appearance, which aired today on The View. And here is, I have a clip here of him explaining why he chose to go on The View.
Now, the last time we tried to play, previously on Legion of News, we tried to play sound cuts from your machine, and instead of it, and it ended up just being like Mahalia Jackson's greatest hits or something coming out.
I don't think that will be an issue this time.
Are you prepared to wager everything on that?
No.
Okay. I've got it turned up. Go ahead.
Gone through a little bit of a beating the last month. Do you really think that being on the show with a bunch of women, five women, who never shut up, is going to be calming?
That is the... Look, I was trying to find a show that Michelle actually watched. And so I thought that... This is it, right here.
Yeah. This is one of our favorite
shows. All those new shows, she's like, let me get the clicker.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
She's a woman. She doesn't follow current events or news.
What? Yeah, why would she want to follow current events?
No, of course not. All right, well, there you go. Did he, at any point during The View, because I haven't seen this, have you?
No, I've only seen a couple of little excerpts. Little clips.
I don't even know what time The View was on here.
It's on at 10 a.m.
All right, so...
We're busy preparing.
Preparing genius for the people.
This fine program.
I was actually busy driving back from... I was busy driving back from the Beeve. At 10, I think.
Is that what we call it now, the Beeve?
I don't know. I have to tell you. Just
Bevo, B-ton.
Please don't do that. B-town. B... What would you call it if you were some jackass... if some jackass would-be hipster DJ?
Beavers. That's an actual word.
No, you know...
Bevo. Bevo would be what you would call it.
Is that sort of our equivalent of the OC or something?
Yeah, I live in Bevo.
That's like if you were some dick that they brought in from, you know, some other city to pretend to be local, that would be how you would try to sort of, relate to the people and let them know where it is that your hood resides.
You know, that's not how we do things in the Bevo.
In the Bevo. So I was driving back. In the 10 o'clock hours, and it was stuck in just endless amounts of traffic, about which we will talk more later. Have you no doubt about that? So I didn't get a chance to watch The View, but I wonder if he did that thing. There's this one move that any guy like Obama, like a powerful man or a man who's in some position of influence or is wealthy or heads a company, and I don't know if anybody ever really notices how often this happens. There's two things that guys like that do. They'll talk about the specific, you know, it's about the man who owns a dry cleaning shop in Schenectady. They talk about the specific dude that they met at one point who has some tax issue that he, you know, will fix if only you'll vote for him. The other thing, though, that guys who are wealthy or influential do is they will display a disproportionate appearance of being henpecked by their wives because they think that it makes them look relatable.
Oh, yeah.
Every single time, you notice this from now on. Every time you see an interview with a guy who runs like a Fortune 500 company, he'll say something, you know, like, I'm glad to see you all here today. My wife let me off laundry duty long enough to come here and speak to all of you stockholders here at the New York Stock Exchange. They will always do that because they think that makes them, approachable to women and relatable to the common man. So I'll guarantee you he did that at some point during the View interview. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, he did discuss that people still have to get over their issues with race. And here's something he said about that.
We are Americans. Everybody here is connected in some fashion. I think most Americans feel that way. Mm-hmm. But what is still true is that there's still kind of a reptilian side of our brain, right? That part of our brain that if somebody looks different or sounds different, that there's a part of us that is cautious. And what we have to do is fight against that. And that's part of what Shirley Sherrod was trying to say in the speech, if you actually read the whole speech.
So did he actually, at any point, did he sort of take responsibility for ultimately making her pull over by the side of the road and quit via BlackBerry? Because yeah. The only thing I saw from him is that he did the folks thing again. Some folks in his administration overreacted apparently a little bit. Not him,
no,
of course.
Not him.
He didn't do
folks.
It. He was gone. He was golfing. But he was in the kitchen making a smoothie where the whole thing went down. He came back and it was just chaos. All right. I wonder, let me ask you this.
Says that what Shirley Sherrod was trying to say in the speech, if you actually read the whole speech, she was acknowledging, I have my own biases based on my experiences, but if I'm able to look inward and reflect, then I can get beyond my biases. That's an exercise that all of us have to undergo day in and day out.
When you're not busy battling reptilians or whatever right. It is. We were talking before the show, actually, saying how great it would be. I like to think there should be some sort of a graphic novel where You know, we're like, Obama has to make a show of like, fine, I'll get people jobs, I'll fix the stupid, I'll balance the budget, I'll worry about North Korea, you know, whatever. But really, that's all just a facade, because the president's biggest danger, the biggest threat to Earth is some sort of a reptilian life form that is bent on world domination.
But they look all look exactly like us,
and that,
like in V.
And that's what he spends like 98% of his day on. And then meanwhile, he's got to fight off like the Washington Post to just get all over his ass about the Afghanistan or something. Really, he's like, fine, I'll just okay, yes, we'll go burn
he
opium
had jobs,
fields,
whatever.
And, you know, but then he just goes right back to some secret sort of war room where like his desk slides and then he goes down a pole and he lands inside, you know, some fortified bunker with the Joint Chiefs. And then they cut to a video screen where it's just hellish combat being happened, you know, like hand to hand, and you know, firefight going on between huge squads of green reptilian aliens and Earth's bravest fighters. You know, but then he has to run back upstairs to like pardon a turkey for Thanksgiving or something.
But then every once in a while, when he's giving an interview like this, he lets his guard down and he accidentally kind of lets a little bit slip about the reptilian-brained aliens.
Because occasionally you have to fight the reptilian part of your brain. Or your skin, like when you sunburned. Damn. All right. There's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Well, while he was on The View, he was, of course, quizzed about things like, did he know that Lindsay Lohan was in jail? And
it's hard to believe people don't take The View seriously as an outlet for news and thought.
Yeah. Barbara Walters did ask him. Apparently, he does the same with his kids in the evenings called Rose and Thorn, where it's like, things that happened to you today, what was the rose and what was the thorn? And so, you know, he shared that his rose this month was his weekend in Maine with his wife and his kids.
Kill me.
You know, playing on the beach and doing things. And then Barbara, though, really decided to
with
ask
the screws
him,
to him, yeah, to ask tough questions.
So listen to how she says this, though, at the
thorn.
Well, where do I begin here?
can I play that again?
Thorn.
Well, where do I begin here? No, look, obviously, the country's gone through a tough stretch since I took office. When I was sworn in, I know you showed the inauguration. We were losing at that time 750,000 jobs per month. The economy was shrinking at a pace of about 6.5%, which is unheard of since the Great Depression. And so the last 20 months has been a nonstop effort to restart the economy, to stabilize the financial system, to make sure that we're creating jobs again instead of losing them. And in the midst of all that, we've also had the oil spill. We've also had two wars. We've also had a pandemic, H1N1, that...
So things are awesome,
you
really.
Know, all she was really asking was how has summer's been going? You know, well, I get to play with my kids on the beach. Well, and then there's these wars and the pandemic.
Some weather we're having.
And the economy.
You know, I forgot all about was it the bird flu? What was H1? That was the swine flu.
That was swine flu.
Yeah, you know, that just didn't end up being nearly as exciting as I was hoping.
No, it was just another flu.
But that was the thing. It was just like, I mean, I know David Walker had it and everything, but I mean.
So did Kristen Bowie.
But he's no, really?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not dead.
No, it was just another really bad flu.
It's what they say about, you know, the recession is when your neighbor's out of work and the depression is when you're out of work. Well, something's not a pandemic until it's, you know, it doesn't even have to be in my backyard. If it's, if it's 2 degrees away from me. I think Walker said he didn't even know he had it until he went to the doctor because he was feeling kind of a general malaise.
Yeah.
Had been going on. It was sort of a lingering kind of apathy, an ennui. And he finally went to the doctor. He's like, hey, what is up with that? And as he relayed the story to me, actually here we'll have to have him, kind of tell the tale. But so David Walker goes to the doctor and he says, hey, so I've been feeling run down for like 5, 6, 7, 8 days. Like, what is that about? And the doctor says, well, sit here and we'll prod you with some things and then we'll come back and we'll smear something on a stick and then we'll take it and we'll put it in the machine and then we'll tell you. So they go and they do all that and the doctor comes back and says, I think he might have actually gone home. I think they may have said, look, the test is going to take a while. We'll call you. He's home, phone rings, he answers it, and the doctor says, yeah, you got the swine flu. And Walker said he expected there to be some sort of like, so we're going to come wrap your house in plastic right now, and then we're going to burn everything you own. And he said, the doctor's basically like, so you want to like take it easy and, just avoid any strenuous activity, have lots of liquids. And Walker's like, well, well, do I need to, like, wear a mask or something? And the doctor said, well, if it makes you feel better, I guess, sure, do whatever you want. I mean, whatever, I got to go, bye. And, like, that was it. It was just like a complete non-event. So it's like they just dangle interesting news stories and then they cruelly snatch them away from us. It's just not fair. All right, well, what are you going to do?
A Sherwood, Oregon man was arrested after police said he was taking underskirt photographs of women inside a Target department store. Police said they were notified last week by the store on Southwest Tualatin and Sherwood Road. Hey, that's the one by me. That surveillance cameras recorded a man in the act of taking photographs underneath women's skirts as they were shopping. The man returned to the store today, and store security called police.
Did he have a camera on his shoe or something?
I guess maybe he was bending over and doing it. I don't know. But well, he was doing it on his cell phone.
But you would notice that. Well, but I mean, unless he has...
probably just reach down and go, kleek.
No, that's not,
people
true. Because,
and of course people would notice. He got caught.
But that doesn't work. Oh, well, okay. So maybe he wasn't very good. I was going to say, because that's... Like, here's the thing. I think about this, actually, sometimes, unsurprisingly. Because when we're not busy rhapsodizing about various narcotics, we seem to spend the rest of our time talking about porn in one form or another. So, you know, it's, you know, but everybody's got to be good at something. There has to. Everyone needs a wheelhouse. But, you know, there is that whole category of porn online, the so-called upskirt photography.
Is there?
Yeah, it's you say as though you don't know.
No, I really was not aware of that. But I guess it makes sense.
But you live with
a
man. I mean, it's
that doesn't mean that doesn't mean he's a customer of every aspect of porn.
Sure, it doesn't. But there's this whole because there's these laws that get passed all the time because it's one of those laws they never really anticipated needing. I think Seattle was the first city to ban. What was the other? Because it was actually in the law where they said. You know, the act of putting placing a camera at such an angle so that it may photograph a place reasonably believed to be private, i.e. up your skirt or whatever. Yeah. And it actually said, or so-called upskirt photography, which I guess is that sort of the that is the internet colloquialism for that. The other one is down blouse photography. And that's where a guy just goes to, like, the mall and just stands up on a railing by Orange Julius and waits for some chick with big cans to walk down below and just shoots a camera like that, which is just retarded.
What is wrong with men?
But see, that's not even a thing that's wrong with men. That's a thing that's wrong with that guy. Because, you know, the thing with men, the average guy, don't look at me like I'm sound like he's representative, like he and I are brothers under the skin or something, like he's representative of my whole sex. That's not something wrong with men. That's something wrong with the creepy, heavy-breathing guy at the mall with the camera at the railing. Because a normal guy would just see the same thing. There's a Victoria's Secret billboard across the way at the mall that's like 70 feet across, probably. Or, you know, like a catalog of any kind at home or the internet. But so that is like, I think it's the whole violation thing. But I wonder about that, though, because it's like the relative heights of men and women are such that unless you're like, you know, lurch or something, you got hands down to the floor, how would you ever connive to get a picture up some chick's skirt without her even realizing it? It seems like you would, by definition, have to have some, you know, some thing that Q gave you.
I don't know.
Wait, is it Q or is it M? What's the Bond thing? I'm conflating my franchises. It's M.
Yes.
Anyway, so there you go. I don't even know how that works. Although poorly in this case, apparently.
Well, Sherwood police arrested Matthew Navi, however his name is pronounced.
But he is...
22. And charged him with 4 misdemeanor counts of invasion of personal privacy. Police said they also seized his cell phone and home computer and will investigate further to determine whether he could face additional charges. And he looks exceptionally dim, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, there's nothing going on with this kid.
No, that is a low forehead kind of a fellow.
I was going to say it's a low forehead and a tiny face. His head is he's got a huge neck and a little tiny head.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a big overture and a little show there. There's not a lot going on inside there. That's just the sound of a dried pea rattling around inside a can, in my assessment. He just seems, you know, the look for this is dull. That's the look for, what is his name? Do they not give his name?
No, it does. Matthew something or other.
Matthew Neve. All right. Well, in any event, so there you go. So there's that guy. Here's Don Taylor. By the way, if you are listening to this program, you can listen to it again for the first time later on today via iTunes here at pdx.fm or at legionofnews.com. And coming up today at 1 o'clock via rickemerson.com, the Rick Emerson radio program, will storm the airwaves from Portland to Portland and beyond. So if you are not yet a subscriber, shame on you. And you can remedy that situation at rickemerson.com. right now for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. We'll do a whole bunch of, we get the top five come up today, which is the second half of a top five we started. I think on Tuesday we'll talk about Don Taylor's top five live concert experiences. We'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority asks the magic question, what are phantom clowns? That'll be coming up today. What are phantom clowns? And then I'll talk about my leverage experience yesterday, which is just, which was great, but just surreal. I mean, it was just the strangest day ever. So we will talk about that. That's all coming at 1 o'clock via the Rick Emerson Show. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do a little bit of science news, shall we?
It's time for Science on the March, courtesy of Legion of News, right here on PDX.fm.
Scientists from around the world are providing even more evidence of global warming, one day after President Barack Obama renewed his call for climate legislation. A comprehensive review of key climate indicators confirms the world is warming and the past decade was the warmest on record, the annual State of the Climate Report declares. Compiled by more than 300 scientists from 48 countries, the report said its analysis of 10 indicators are clearly and directly related to surface temperatures. All tell the same story. Global warming is undeniable. Concern about rising temperatures has been growing in recent years. As atmospheric scientists report, rising temperatures associated with greenhouse gases released into the air by industrial and other human processes.
From what news source does this come? Do we have a, I mean, is this a reputable sort of a,
yeah, this is like
a, yeah, this is like a mainstream news organization.
Yeah.
That's just bad writing to say that global warming is undeniable. Clearly, it's not undeniable. There are people who deny it. That's just shoddy abuse of the English language.
But those people are wrong.
Yes, I know. I'm talking linguistics.
Right. Undeniable is, yes.
Look, can we at least stick?
It's like you could say irrefutable, but at the same time, people are refuting it. So therefore,
irrefutable. See, that's different. No, because to be being refuted, that's a binary thing where something is either rebutted or does not. To rebut is to put up a successful, you know, counter-argument. So you could say
it doesn't necessarily have to be successful. It's a counter-argument.
No, because if it's just full of fail, then you haven't rebutted anything. Then that's, you know, in other words, if you say 2 plus 3 is 7, mm-hmm. and I say, no, it's not. 2 plus 3 is, you know, if I say 2 plus 3 is 9.
A rebuttal is not necessarily a correction. A rebuttal is merely a contrary argument.
Is that true? I have to look it up now.
Yes.
So you're saying it has nothing to do with the outcome. It's just the response nature of it.
Yeah. A refutation and a rebuttal are both merely a counter argument.
Hold on. Now I have to look it up. Can we all agree that he's using undeniable incorrectly?
I think we can agree with that. Yes.
All right. These are the things that matter. I don't care. I couldn't possibly care less.
This has been your grammar corner with Don and Rick.
No, because you know, here's the thing. Global warming, climate change, whatever, real, not real, exaggerated, made up, true, scary, lethal, doesn't matter. I couldn't care less. Poor grammar hurts us all, and it does so today. You know, Don, misuse of the English language isn't a thing that's going to harm us in 70 years. It harms us right now, and so it's got to be addressed.
Well, you know, the right-wing people that are concerned with immigration, illegal immigration and legal immigration both, should actually start to concern themselves with global warming. Because a study by Princeton University researchers that was released on Monday suggested that continued warming could cause as many as 6.7 million more Mexicans to move to the United States because of drought affecting their crops.
And they absorb the sun, too. That's the other thing. It's, white people, they reflect the sun right back, and thus they diminish its harmful rays. Whereas our brown friends, cannot say the same thing.
I've never heard that before.
It's, the mainstream media is not going to tell you that, Dawn. That's one of those things that the liberal-controlled journalists in this country, we all know who pays their bills. By the way, a rebuttal is defined by Webster's as being a contradiction.
Right.
So, but see,
a contradiction, though, again,
but I think you're wrong about
that's
this,
a contrary though. Argument. It's not necessarily a correct contrary argument.
But in other words, if you are attempting to rebut something and your argument, your alleged refutation is flawed, therefore inaccurate, it is not in reality a contradiction. It is a claim, but not a contradiction. A contradiction means it is the state of being opposite, which means it has to be true.
Unless you're right in the first place and their contrary argument is incorrect.
Oh, wow. Now I'm just like I'm in a Lewis Carroll poem. I don't even know what's happening
now. Someone can contradict you and be incorrect.
freaking me out. Wait, but that only... But they can contradict me and be incorrect. Well, no, but that presumes... Okay, we have to stop this now. No. Seriously, because then I was... Because... I was about to open Ninja Words and just start comparing different dictionary definitions against one another. All right, we have to stop this now. There you go. Are we still in science news?
Someone in the text box says, this argument is literally making my head explode.
Well done.
Yes, we still have a little more science news.
All right.
Two Russian cosmonauts on Tuesday completed a nearly seven-hour-long spacewalk to replace a video camera and improve cable connections to the orbiting laboratory's newest module. No significant difficulties were reported during the spacewalk by Fyodor Yurchichin and Mikhail Kornienko, which was directed by Russian Mission Control just outside Moscow. The cosmonauts replaced a camera used in monitoring docking of automatic transfer vehicles, supply ships sent by the European Space Agency. They also attached cables connecting the rest of the station to the Russian RASVET module. RASVET, used for storage and as a mini laboratory, was delivered to the station in May.
A mini laboratory?
It's a mini laboratory.
Is that sort of a... This is on the space station? They have a mini laboratory?
Yes.
So how big is the space station, then, is my question. I mean, do we have any...
It's the size of five football fields.
You're just saying that because you know that I don't know... I can't successfully refute or rebut your argument there because I would just be making crap up.
Notice how you have to use the modifier, by the way, successfully refute my argument.
Yeah, well,
as opposed to merely refute.
I'm trying to play in your court here. Okay. I'm trying to Rick Emerson gives. I'm not going to just needlessly prolong this sort of linguistic ground war in which we find ourselves entrenched. No, but you talk about a space station, and you know, growing up as a child of popular culture, you just imagine some huge, megapolis, just it's massive. But then you think about like Skylab, which was, relatively small. So I wonder how big the space station is. And somebody at one point told me that, now maybe I'm thinking of something else. Is there only one space station, or are there multiple space stations, or have there been multiple space stations just over the last couple of years? So because you hear a lot of the International Space Station. Is that what this is?
Yes, this is the NASA International Space Station.
So why is it filled with Russians if it's run by NASA? In other words, this isn't like the Russians own space station. This is the International Space Station,
right,
on which people from all corners of the Earth.
Hence the use of the term international.
Right, but I mean, okay, do we trade off with other nations?
It's pretty big. I mean, that's what it looks like, and people are inside of that walking around and stuff.
This is totally unhelpful. You are showing me a picture of the space station with the Earth in the background, as though that's supposed to give me any sense of scale.
What, do you want to see it next to a quarter?
Yes. I know how big a quarter is.
Here's the space station, and here's a shoe.
There's no way in which I don't hate you. Just like FYI, in case you were curious about that. I loathe you in every conceivable way. Put it in front of the Earth. You might as well. Here's a picture of the space station in front of God.
Well, where exactly do you think they're going to be taking pictures of it? They take pictures of it while it's up in the sky, rotating around things.
They had to build it somewhere. They didn't build it on Venus. It's not like, where did you build it? Well, we built it in Lady Aberlin's house.
But most of the publicity pictures aren't going to be of that, because that's not very sexy. It's like, well, we want to see pictures of the space station. Here's some pictures of it in a giant parking lot somewhere before we send it up.
This whole thing.
Besides which, it was probably taken up there in pieces and assembled in space.
This could have been solved if you just said, it's 7,000 feet.
I tried. I said five football fields, and you did not believe me.
I saw through that ruse, though. My whole thing, though, is that when they talk about the International Space Station, and you just sort of referenced this, somebody said that it was like a habit trail in the sense that they could just expand on it and make it bigger and bigger over time by putting new pieces onto it. I wonder if that's true.
Right. Sure, why not?
See, that's sort of great, because then you get the idea that we could eventually... eventually just sort of piecemeal, we could just move all of humanity up there, like the Boston album cover. And we could all just be, as Earth finally becomes, I don't know, pick one, covered with trash or too hot or something. And then just
after we're taken over by the reptilians.
After we've finally lost and the reptilians have stormed the gates like Visigoths and rendered our cities unlivable. I don't even know what the hell this show's about sometimes. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, I think I will save some of our science for later. So
are you saying that we're being? Are you saying that the we're not really able to successfully navigate the various straits and corridors of these science stories today?
Well, okay, I'll tell you another one.
That the need to explain them outstrips our ability to do so. All right, let's do one more.
Pigs are capable of feeling optimism and pessimism, depending on their environment, a UK study has revealed. Scientists from Newcastle University in northern England found pigs could indicate whether they were feeling optimistic or pessimistic about life as a result of the way in which they lived. The animals were taught to associate treats, like apples, with the sound of a glockenspiel, and the unpleasant sound of a rustling plastic bag with the noise of a dog training clicker device. They were then split into two groups and placed in different environments, one with more straw space and stimulation, and the other in a smaller, boring environment. When scientists made the new squeaking noise, unlike the glockenspiel or clicker the pigs were familiar with, the pigs in the comfortable environment approached expecting a treat, while the animals residing in the cramped, boring conditions were pessimistic and kept their distance. The study leader says that he finds that almost without exception, the pigs in the enriched environment were optimistic about what this new noise could mean and approached expecting something good to happen.
Who would ever think of this experiment? How bored must they have been at the laboratory that day? And a glockenspiel. I don't even know what a glockenspiel is. I always think that a glockenspiel, when I picture, when somebody, because you hear that term used a lot. I was reading, I think, about pet sounds the other day, the Brian Wilson album, the Beach Boys album, and they were talking about, you know, using all kinds of strange devices, the theremin, the mellotron, the glockenspiel. And when I hear the word glockenspiel, for some reason, I always just think of the inside of a clock. You know, it's a bunch of gears intersecting. Clearly, it's not just a thing made of a bunch of clock gears. I mean, but I have no idea what it is. I don't really know glockenspiel. Don Taylor.
Not a clue.
Do you have any idea what sound it makes?
No.
Do you know what it looks like?
No.
Do you know who might play one?
Germans. Anyway, the pig study, they said this correspondence with humans sort of glass half full, glass half empty attitude, where depending on the sort of mood you're in, the sort of circumstances of your life, you will respond in different ways to ambiguous cues. So like if, you know, someone calls, your wife says, Rick, we need to talk. And you've been thinking, wow, life sucks and I'm miserable and unhappy. It'll be like, I'm in trouble. I'm getting divorced. But if you're happy and you're having a good time, it'd be like, sure, what do you want? And that, you think maybe it'll become something good.
That I project a mental state onto a theoretically blank stimuli.
Exactly.
Sense of stimuli. All
exactly.
Right, okay, there you go.
That was science.
There you go. Glockenspiel played by Germans. That's what you can take away from today. That is the one bit of finite knowledge that you now have. You are listening to Legion of News. For reasons that kind of pass understanding, right here at pdx.fm, or you can find us later on at in archive form at legionofnews.com, or on iTunes or on your mobile device as well. That is mobile.pdx.fm coming up at 1 o'clock. And we'll have the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com featuring the top five. We'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority will answer the question, what are phantom clowns? What are phantom clowns? We'll also have a... Is any of that accurate over there to my right?
No.
Okay.
We'll have a taser watch. I know that much.
At some point earlier in the week, we had a geek watch and a taser watch. We may or may not have any of those
things.
I think
we will have a geek watch as well.
All right. So, it'll just be a magical grab bag of happenings. And we'll talk about the leverage thing. I feel like this is the point where I ought to tease it somehow, where I ought to use some sort of tantalizing half bit of information. To say, like, I'll tell you about my encounter with Timothy Hutton.
I was going to say, did you get to touch someone famous? Did you smell anybody good?
Yes, I did. But I hadn't even really thought about it, but I did, and I don't know if I should even talk about it. It's one of those things where you just, like, you don't, it's always an issue of how much one, you know, how much of what happens, what happens at the set stays at the set, but then by the same token, I am here to serve the people. I am a servant of the people of Portland.
That's true.
Those who they work hard for the money, so hard for it, honey, so they can give it to me. So then we can then provide to them in return entertainment and amusement.
Your true fealty is to the listeners.
I feel like I must choose between masters here. But, anyway, so we'll talk about the leverage thing next hour. This very fine radio program, Legion of News, brought to you by fine folks such as Michael Beatty. At Michael Beatty's company, The Cleaning Solution, can be reached at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. Again, one more time, it's 971-533-3211. And if you have found yourself, and this is some of the things where, like, you don't, one of two things, you either won't notice some stain in your house, or it's on your rug, or it's in your carpet or something, because it's been underneath something else, or it's been underneath a table, or it's been behind the sofa, or you do this sometimes. Like, I will get up and I will realize that while I was brushing my teeth or getting dressed, or, you know, downstairs or something, that the dog has engaged in some sort of destructive behavior, which I then don't notice until I have to leave the house. And so then you got your two choices. You could either be late for whatever appointment you have. You should spend another 15 minutes trying to clean some blueberries out of the carpet or whatever. And then you're just going to throw off your whole day. Or you're just saying, well, no time to clean it now. I guess I'll worry about it later. Of course, then by the time you get home, it's just solidified. And it's just become this sort of petrified gum-like substance that is so deeply worked into the carpet. It's just never, ever going to get out. And then what do? You say, well, you know, I've had a hard day at work, and right now I'd rather just sit on the sofa and get drunk and watch monster truck rallies. I'll clean that tomorrow, but you never clean that. And then eventually you just start moving pieces of furniture to cover the stain until you think, finally, I'm just going to pass this off to the next poor sap that buys my house.
These ads make me hesitant to ever come visit you.
Why? Because I live in a sty. Is that how it sounds? Like I'm just like I live in just one giant Pollock painting. In any event, don't be this guy, by which I mean me. You just call Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solutions, 971-533-3211. Have him come get that pesky stain out of your rug. It's 971-533-3211. Here's Dawn Taylor.
A glockenspiel, by the way, is similar to a xylophone. And if you pot up these sounds here.
Preview.
Yeah, that's a preview of a glockenspiel.
It sounds exactly like a xylophone. Is it a series of bells and not metal plates?
No, it's metal plates. It's just small. It's a little smaller than your
standard. It's a tiny xylophone.
It's a tiny xylophone.
It's a xylonet.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. So wait, never mind. If that's a glockenspiel, what's a harpsichord?
Harpsichord is sort of like a pianissimo. It's like a piano kind of thing.
That's being showy right there.
You're hitting strings.
That is, you know, right there, that was spiking the ball when you just said it's like a pianissimo. That's just running up the score on me right there, because you know that I don't know what that means. I couldn't even tell how big the space station was when you put it next to the picture of the planet where I live. All right, well, in any event, let's move on.
Well, it is smaller than the planet.
Okay.
A new Career Builder survey of hiring managers reveals how important body language is when going on a job interview. For example, 67% say failure to make eye contact would make them less likely to hire someone. Senior career advisor Mike Irwin says such mistakes are easy to avoid if you prepare for the interview.
And this
language.
Is language. Let's see where that might be, do you suppose? Where could that have gone to? Where? Let me just turn off the...
You need to talk to family. You need to talk to friends. You need to look in the mirror so that you aren't doing some of the things that hiring managers say will eliminate you from being hired from the company.
I swear to God, I interviewed a guy years ago who just sat in the... I don't even think he realized he was doing it. He just sat there and was, like, mining one of his nostrils the entire time. Just two knuckles deep. As I sat there for, like, 20 minutes going... So what sort of assets do you think you bring to the company as a person? And what is the skill set that you believe most strongly identifies you as a worker? And how will that interface with what we're trying to accomplish here in a sort of symbiosis kind of... And meanwhile, he's just... Nose just full of finger. You know, and after a while, you just have to go, that's great. We're going to keep your resume on file. Please get out now. Because it's horrifying, and you can't really point it out. I didn't even think he realized it was just some sort of a tick that he was doing.
It's so sad, though, that you have to actually tell people. It's like, you know, talk to the people around you to find out if you have any uncomfortable personal habits that make you look like a freak.
Well, by definition, it seems like that might be the sort of thing they're not likely to tell you. Because it's just... But if I would say that if you cannot find anybody in your circle of friends, if your circle of friends is more of just a straight line that goes out and it stops with you and the guy who delivers your mail, then maybe you do have an inordinately large number of those traits.
Or if all of your friends are very similar to you and you find that, you know... All the guys hanging out at the comic book store say that your people skills are just fine.
It's a lot of scratchers and pokers. Then, maybe you want to broaden that a little bit.
Irwin says that these quirks may seem insignificant, but not to bosses.
if you're crossing your arms or if you're touching your face or playing with your hair, you're clearly not ready for that interview, and the hiring manager is going to pick up on that.
Well, this guy's totally a voice number three, though.
If you're crossing your arms or if you're touching your face or playing with your hair, you're clearly not ready for that interview, and the hiring manager is going to pick up on that.
When I play Magic the Gathering, I find that Thornscape Battle Mage, the wizard elf, is the character who most closely mirrors my own personality traits.
Irwin says demonstrating confidence in an interview is even more important now with the labor market so competitive.
I'm sorry.
They're trying to really find something that is going to eliminate people from the pack. Unfortunately, it's going to be somebody who doesn't make eye contact or somebody who is lacking a smile.
Sure, on what aisle can I find your LAN cabling?
All right. So there you go. Whatever you do, talk like that guy when you go on the interview. And I was always told that that chicks are supposed to twist their hair when they talk, because if you're a guy interviewing him and they twist their head, it means that they want to hump you.
Supposedly, if a woman scratches like her right hand or something like that while talking to a man, that's what that guy Mystery said, that that's a signal that a woman is attracted to you if she scratches.
Is that the guy from the game?
Yeah.
The dating, the respect the sea guy? That if she scratches her hand, that she's into you?
Yeah. Although, I don't think that's really true necessarily.
Maybe it just means you have dry skin or scabies or something.
Because I know I had really itchy hands for a while because I was washing my hands a lot because I was doing a lot of baking and cooking. And so if I was sitting around, scratching the back of my hand, it really wasn't a sign of sexual desire.
You might just have scaly skin.
Yeah.
All right. There's Dawn Taylor. She doesn't have scaly skin.
No. A judge sentenced a Tennessee woman to 42 months in prison for faking breast cancer and told her it was reprehensible that she took donations of sick leave, money, and cancer patient support services for 5 years. It seems to me like some kind of confinement is necessary, Hamilton County Criminal Court Judge Don Poole said Monday after a four-hour hearing in which attorneys for 39-year-old Keely Maynor of Chattanooga asked for a probation sentence that would allow her to work and pay about $54,000 in restitution. Poole added 10 years of probation to the sentence for Maynor, a mother of three, and ordered her taken into custody immediately. I have problems with somebody who shaves their head and says they have cancer, the judge said. Maynor duped co-workers, friends, groups such as Breast Cancer Network of Strength, a church and high school football booster club. She said in an email when she left her job in the city's regional planning department that her claim of having cancer was a charade. She pleaded guilty to theft and forgery as a part of a deal with prosecutors. The charade included Maynor getting more than $4,000 from a silent auction at a black and pink benefit that was held on her behalf. Maynor said she spent that money on Christmas presents for her children. She'll be eligible for parole after serving one-third of the sentence. He ordered her to start making $300 monthly restitution payments after her release.
You know, it'd be great if she actually got cancer now. And I mean that. I mean that figuratively. It would be fantastic if something huge and malignant and immediately metastasized announced itself in her brain. Or maybe like on the front of her face, like some sort of a spongy deformity.
She said she felt unloved and carried out the terminal cancer scheme to get attention. She described herself as a victim of emotional abuse as a teenager by her mother and sexual abuse by a stepbrother.
Don't get in line. The thing about cancer is, well, I think I speak for everybody when I say that we should... It's too bad that they couldn't just as some sort of a penalty, just inject her with cancer.
Yeah.
Can you do that? Can you give someone cancer?
Probably.
That's an interesting, because it's your own cells that reproduce, you know, that they, without being under, you know, they
could just irradiate her.
I'm sorry, we're just going to have to saturate with radiation until your marrow is destroyed. Just hold on a second. This is going to sting. Because, you know, like you can inject somebody with like a bloodborne pathogen or a flatworm or something, and, they'll just be worm-ridden. But if cancer is your own cells reproducing uncontrollably and turning against you, then if they injected you with somebody else's cancer cells, I wonder if it would be the same thing or if they would just be sort of incinerated and taken out with the trash.
I don't know.
That's going to consume me for the rest of the day.
But I think that it is reasonable to say that her punishment should be that she is actually injected.
Well, you would think that she would just... like, even if it doesn't really do anything, even if actually being injected with cancer isn't lethal, they shouldn't let her know that. They should just, they should just tell her it is and then see what happens. And then it would be sort of a test of psychosomatosis at the same time. So you're double-fisting it. Finally, you would think she would have brains enough. Clearly she does not. to feign something that they couldn't actually prove one way or the other. She should have just fabricated a disease.
That's
and then
true.
Created a support group for it and a webpage. I'm going to do that later today.
Okay. Let's do some entertainment news while we have the time.
All right. On a scale of 1 to 5, well, never mind. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday.
Tony Hawk suffered a terribly named injury over the weekend. During a half-pipe demonstration that went extremely wrong, Tony Hawk ended up with a sheared pelvis and a severe hematoma.
Ah.
The pelvis shearing happened during a skate demonstration at the Action Sports Weekend event at downtown Disney's Main Plaza in Anaheim, California.
It's the happiest place on earth, kids.
Tony was attempting to do a 540. Instead, he got an epic fail and a pelvis shearing. He was forced to go to UC Irvine Trauma Center, where, according to his blog, he was treated for a sheared pelvis. Tony has since tweeted, "I will no longer take walking for granted."
You can't, okay, but you can't just say that without describing what that even means. What
I
is
don't
a sheared,
know.
I know what a pelvis is. I know what shearing is.
I don't know how you get a sheared pelvis.
Oh, I know how you get it. I just don't know what it looks like. Because you got, like, if you're shearing off the head of a nail or something, you're just lopping the top of that thing straight off. Clean off. A sheared pelvis. That doesn't seem like a thing that lets you walk ever again.
No.
That seems like where it would be pokey and just sticking out of your skin, like, forever.
Don't know. There's something, there is a, you can find something called a pelvic shear on Wikipedia under the category.
That's a sexual aid.
Pelvic girdle pain.
Pelvic girdle.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, is a pelvic girdle part of your body or is it like a clothing item?
No, it's part of your body.
Okay, well, how am I to know? I clearly am not wise in the ways of the pelvis.
So I'm not sure how you would shear.
All right, let's just decide right now, yes or no. Do we look it up?
No, we don't really have time.
No. I mean, just for our own edification.
Oh, sure. At some point, yes. Because
it's one of those things, like, you might look up and then you're sorry you did because they say, like, this man in the photo below, and before you can avert your eyes, it's just scorched. All right.
William Shatner interviewed Lee Boyd Malvo, one of the killers known as the DC Snipers, for a television special, and Malvo told Captain Kirk that he and John Allen Muhammad had committed about 42 shootings and tried to recruit more people to carry out the 2002 killings that terrified Washington, D.C. The special is part of Shatner's new series, Aftermath with William Shatner, which premieres on Bio on Monday and takes an in-depth look at what happens when people are tragically or infamously transformed from unknown citizens into household names overnight. Getting an opportunity to speak with Lee Malvo is a moment I'll never forget, Shatner said in a press statement. He was only 17 when he committed these horrific acts, a monster forged by the only father figure in his life, and it was simply astonishing that he's found the maturity and humility to admit so many new crimes in his effort to make amends.
Was there a mix-up in casting or something when they got William Shatner to host this show? Were they just drawing names out of a bag or something, and he was alongside Richard Mall, and he said, well, I guess we'll go with this guy.
Well, it's set to air, I guess, tonight on A&E will be Confessions of the DC Sniper with William Shatner, an Aftermath special.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch that. I don't want to break anybody's heart or anything. I'm going to skip that.
Jimmy, the pages on the printer there behind you?
Yes, I will.
Thank you so very, very much.
All right, there you go. Are you printing on both sides of the paper?
Yes, I am.
Are we low on paper? Is that why?
Yes.
Okay.
And also, it's good for the earth, but mostly because we're low on paper.
Okay.
New on TV tonight, a new episode of TNA Wrestling Impact. Total Nonstop Action Wrestling presents some of America's top pro grapplers in Orlando.
I'm sorry, TNA Wrestling? Is this some sort of sexy oil-covered wrestling?
Yes.
You're just nodding your head because you know that's what I want.
Total Nonstop Action. It's an acronym.
Okay, all right.
On Ace of Cakes, Duff goes to Germany's Neuschwanstein Castle and recreates it in a cake. Also, Duff and Catherine deliver a cake to a bat refuge. And on Come Dine With Me, amateur chefs compete. That's not interesting at all. There is a new episode of Futurama.
You just pulled the ripcord on that immediately. Did you watch last week's Futurama?
No, I'm like three behind.
It was so good. It was so good. And I'm only saying this because now, 10 years ago, it would have been pointless to talk about it because you would have to wait like 6 months or something to see it. But it's available, everywhere. It's called Lethal Inspection. And here's the thing about Futurama. I won't belabor the point because I know we're short on time here. But the thing about Futurama is, and of course, I don't even want to say it out loud. Part of me doesn't even want to utter the words. But this was demonstrated definitively in the Jurassic Bark episode about Fry's dog, and that's all I'm going to say. And I'm not going to dwell because no one wants to think about it. So we're going to move on. But I will say that Futurama has the ability, when you are least expecting it, to just come out of the blue and really do something sweet and legitimately charming. And this is one of the, and it's a really, really funny episode. It's hysterical. And it's got Mom in it from Mom's Friendly Robot Company, who is just great. But right near the end, they have a scene that is just, it is really very, very sincerely sort of, heartstring tugging. And in a way that's not cloying, in a way that they sort of earn, the way that Arrested Development sometimes did. So anyway, you got to watch it. It's called Lethal Inspection, last week's Futurama, and then there's a new one tonight as well.
Well, our last story here. A Portland hotel is the second most pet-friendly hotel in the entire nation, according to a survey conducted by TripAdvisor. The survey respondent said Hotel Monaco in Portland had amazing complimentary amenities and services, including special bowls and beds for pets. They also raved about the optional doggy makeovers, a map of pet-friendly breweries, and Timmy, the hotel's four-legged director of pet relations. Rooms average $330 a night.
That's just stupid. Where is the Hotel Monaco? I don't even know where that's at. Is that one of those hotels that they don't put on maps for people like me?
Yeah.
It's
like, $330 a night. You don't need to know where it is.
When I turn on my TomTom, I get the low class version where they just shield me from being able to see certain things. Certain results just don't come up for me.
The top spot, by the way, was the Hermitage Hotel in Nashville. Which has treats upon check-in, cozy beds, and a menu of delicacies just for animals. Also, a dog walking service, on-site grooming, and pet massages.
Well, okay.
So when you're traveling with Philo to Nashville, as I know you will do, you want to stay at the Hotel Hermitage.
Hey, speaking of Nashville and Timmy, well, I'll tell you next hour. All right, and with that, we'll just sort of bring the curtain down on everything here. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler and our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This, my friends, has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.